Blog Talk Radio.
Close and personal with the stars you love, Eva Longoria, Nick Lachey, Allison Sweeney, and many more. Listen all year long to hear exclusive interviews with fascinating people from all across the country. There's only one show that brings you this close to your favorite celebrities, and this is it. Call in to speak with The Drew Show and their guests at 818-495-6928. Don't forget to follow The Drew Show on Twitter at Drew BTR. And now, your host, Andrew.
Looking up, looking down, wrap my mind around the beauty of your sound. And when all else fails, I know a safe place to go. I turn you on, I am whole.
Show gets you up close and personal with the stars you love. Eva Longoria, Nick Lachey, Allison Sweeney, and many more. Listen all year long to hear exclusive interviews with fascinating people from all across the country. There's only one show that brings you this close to your favorite celebrities. And this is it. Call in to speak with The Drew Show and their guests at 818-495-6928. Don't forget to follow The Drew Show on Twitter at DrewBTR. And now, your host, Andrew.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Drew Show. Thank you all so much again for joining me, joining us. I don't know if you heard me the first time that I came on. Little technical difficulties, but The Drew Show wouldn't be The Drew Show without some technical difficulties here and there, right? I seem to say that a lot, but we moved past it, no problem. The song you just heard was Brilliant, Broken, Beautiful by Charlotte Sometimes. The song before that was Jillian Jensen, I Am Whole. Jillian was a contestant on The X Factor. We had her on a few weeks ago, and it was great to have her on. She's a bright young star, and she's going to do so many great things with her life, and we had a great time with her. I am so pleased to welcome our guest onto the show today, and I want to bring him on now. From the Judge Alex. Okay, let's try that again. I'm so pleased to welcome to the show today from Judge Alex Ferrer. He became one of the youngest police officers in the state of Florida at the age of 19 and was named the most trustworthy daytime television host, beating out such names as Oprah, Ellen, Regis, and Dr. Phil. I am so pleased to welcome him to the show today, Judge Alex Ferrer. Welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, well, I want to thank you so much. I know you lead a very busy schedule these days, so I appreciate you taking out the time to join us.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Yeah. So now I understand that you've spent most of your time in Florida. So is that where you live now?
Yes, I live in Miami. I've lived in Miami actually my whole life. You know, a lot of people don't know I was born in Cuba, in Havana, and came over as a baby, and have lived in the U.S. in Miami my entire life, but I actually work in L.A., so I'll fly from Miami to L.A. to take the Judge Alex Show, and then I fly back home.
Oh, wow. So you do lead a busy schedule. I imagine you don't get much time at home because you're in your ninth season of the Judge Alex Show right now.
Yeah, we've been very lucky. We have a very successful show. I think that once people start listening to or watching our show, they kind of get hooked because it is very entertaining, and so yeah. we pick up new viewers every day. But you'd be surprised about my schedule because we tape so many shows at one time that I get a lot of time to spend with my family. It was actually one of the reasons I decided to do this, because I was on the bench as a judge in Miami, and I was approached to do the TV show at a time when the governor of Florida was considering me, and I was probably a few weeks away from an appointment to the appellate court. I had an interview with the governor a couple of weeks away, and television came calling. And it was the schedule that I found most appealing because it allowed me to spend more time with my kids at a point when they were about to go off to college in a few years. I'll tape 9 to 10 shows a day.
Oh, wow.
So in a matter of 3 days, I've taped about 6 weeks' worth of shows. And so you tape an entire season, an entire year pretty quickly like that.
Well, so how long does it take, I'm sorry, to tape each show? How long does that take?
You know, it varies because remember, these are real trials. These are real cases. You know, that's the question I get the most. The public usually says, are these people for real? Are they actors? They're not actors. They're real people. Most of our cases come from courthouses across the country. We have people who go through courthouses everywhere and look for cases that involve relationships, friends, neighbors, coworkers, family, former lovers, because those have more meat to them. They have more details. You know, people don't usually sue their friends the first time that they do something to them. So you get the benefit of the backstory, which is what people at home can relate to.
Right.
We pick up a small percentage of them by people calling our 800 number. But for the most part, we pull them out of courthouses or we contact the people and say, hey, you know, would you like Judge Alex to try your case? So as a result, it's a real trial, and my judgment is really binding. I can't say, oh, you know what, we have all the time we need for the show, so I'm done listening to you. You know, I sometimes the case will go an hour and 10 minutes, and the editors will cut it down and make it fit in the window for a 30-minute show with commercials.
All right, I see. I got you. Well, I want to go back for just a second and talk about your past a little bit. Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, you became one of the youngest police officers in Florida at the age of 19, and I have to say that most people, especially in today's youth, at the age of 19 years old, they have no idea what they want to be in their life, and they're leading, and a lot of them are leading down, you know, different paths. What was it about you that you knew you wanted to pursue a career in law enforcement?
You know, originally I didn't. I mean, when I left high school, when I graduated from high school, I thought I wanted to be a pilot. And I always laugh about that because it was such a strange career choice for me because I used to get airsick every time I flew. My mother worked for an airline, so we were fortunate enough to travel quite a bit. And every time I stepped onto a plane, I got airsick. So you have to ask yourself, what kind of an idiot would think that they can be an airsick pilot? But that's what I wanted to do. And so at 18 years of age, I went and I got my pilot's license and I learned to fly and I loved it. But I said, you know what, I don't think I want to fly everywhere my whole life. I think I'd like to keep that as a hobby. And I had worked at a gas station during my high school years, getting to the point where at about 17, I was managing the station. And I met a lot of cops there. And my grandfather had been a well-respected police officer in Cuba, and I really liked the way people looked up to him because he was trustworthy. And I said, you know, and like most young men, I was attracted to the idea of playing cops and robbers on the big scale. So sure. I decided to do that. But along the way, my parents gave me really, really good advice, and they said, you know what, keep studying because you never know, you might change your mind. And I speak to students about this all the time, about my career path and how I got to where I am and choices that they can make that will increase their chance of success in the future. And that was one of the choices I made. I listened to them and I said, you know what, it's not going to hurt me. You know, that might change my mind and want to do something different. And if I don't, I'll just be better educated. So that won't hurt. And I kept studying. Right. And by the time I finished, I was ready to try something else and became a lawyer and then a judge.
Yeah. So you were a police officer and you went to school at the same time, like you said. So, and I know law school takes a very long time. I've known people that went through law school. And how difficult was that for you, maintaining your life and trying to do all this? Did it ever get very overwhelming?
It was completely overwhelming. But, you know, you do what you have to do. And it was even that much harder because even though law schools have a program, or many law schools have a program for people who work full-time, they'll have like night classes, and instead of 3 years, you do 4 years. I didn't want to do that. So my days would start at 8 a.m. in law school, and I would be in class all day till 4:00. And then at 4:30, I would put on my police uniform, and I would patrol until 12:30 a.m. And I would bring the books in the car. And when I wasn't on a call, I was looking at the books and studying for the next day. And the chief knew about it. I talked to him, and he was nice enough to say, listen, just park somewhere visible so you're deterring crime. We're still going to send calls your way. But if I were you, I'd be focusing on law school too. So when you're not busy with an arrest or something, I don't mind if you study as long as it's someplace public so that people see the police car. And so that's the way I made it through law school. And then sometimes, you know, you get an arrest at 12 midnight or 11:30 at night, and you're transporting them to jail until 2:30 a.m. and writing the paperwork. And I still had to be at class at 8 a.m. the next day. And there was a semester where I had a lab, a class I had to attend at 6 p.m., and the chief let me go in uniform, and I sat there with an out-of-service call. They wouldn't send me anything. I had a little earpiece in my ear in case an emergency call went out. I could bail out of class and run. But other than that, I had to make up the hour at the end of the shift. So instead of at 12:30, I get off at 1:30. So it was grueling. I didn't have a moment's rest for that period of time because, my days off on the police department were Thursday, Friday, but I had class. And my weekends where I didn't have class, I had to work as a cop. So it was a nonstop. But, you know, as I said at the beginning, you do what you have to do. I didn't have a silver spoon in my mouth, and I wasn't rich, so I did it my way.
Well, what's great about that whole thing is, though, that you had a great support system around you, that you had people encouraging you, and even people with the police force that they were willing to help you out any way they could. So that was great that you had that as well.
Absolutely. And the other support I had was the fact that, you know, America is the land of opportunity. I mean, if you're willing to work hard, you can do anything in America. And I firmly believe that. I mean, my story really is an American dream story. I came here as a little baby from Cuba. And because of the opportunities here, because of the educational opportunities, especially, that people sometimes don't take advantage of, but people from other countries would die to have, I was able to become the youngest cop, as you said, in Miami, and I became the youngest circuit judge in Miami, and now I'm a member of a very small fraternity of nationally syndicated television judges. And it's all because of the opportunities that America provides to anybody who's really willing to put in the effort.
Yeah. Well, you spent over 10 years on the bench, and I mean, I just cannot even imagine what it's like, you know, going from police officer and being in law school to a judge. But you handled some of the worst cases in Florida history, and I always thought as an attorney it would be difficult to represent someone and defend them, knowing in their heart they committed a horrible crime. But as a judge, you're sitting up there listening to everything, and I don't know, the best way I can ask is, what is that like for you? Does it ever get personal, especially when it comes to kids?
It does. I mean, it's very difficult to hear some of the horrible things that people do. As a lawyer, I didn't do any criminal defense. I just couldn't switch sides that easily from having been a cop to being a criminal defense lawyer. I did civil litigation, but I don't have a. You know, I certainly don't begrudge any of the lawyers who do criminal defense. Our system needs prosecutors and defense attorneys to make sure that the evidence is properly tested, to make sure somebody who's innocent doesn't get wrongfully convicted. But as a lawyer, as a judge, or as a police officer, you're constantly dealing with the worst of the worst, and you're constantly dealing with people's sufferings, and it can definitely get to you. And as you said, I handled some of the worst cases over my tenure as a circuit court judge in Miami. One of them that's particularly known, although several of them were very high profile, is the movie that came out in March, Pain and Gain, with Mark Wahlberg and The Rock, about these bodybuilders. That was my trial. I was the judge in that case. It took 4.5 months to try that case. It was the longest criminal prosecution in Miami's history. And it was a fascinating case. And I knew from the beginning, I said to myself, someday someone's going to make a movie about this, because there was just too much there. It had to be a movie. And I actually was asked to play the judge in the movie by Michael Bay. And unfortunately, I had a direct conflict with a speech I was giving at a graduation, and you know, they couldn't move the shooting date for the courtroom scene, and I couldn't cancel on the kids, so on the students. So I missed my opportunity on the big screen. But yes, those, you know, the constantly dealing with people's suffering, and you know, who killed their sister and who raped their neighbor, and those types of level crimes, it does get to you. No question about it.
Now, some people may think that it's funny that I'm going to ask this next question. I don't know, but I've always wondered, when you're a judge and you're sitting up there, and the jury comes in and they've made their verdict, and they hand you the ballot, and you look at it to see what their verdict is, are you ever shocked? Are you ever like, really, this is what they came up with?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of cases where jurors acquit somebody who the evidence, I think, clearly showed that they were guilty. But that's the jury's job. It's not my job. You know, I can't replace my opinion for their opinion. That's the reason we have a jury system. And let's face it, judges, like everybody else, get jaded. You know, if I hear a defendant give this, you know, if I hear defendants giving the same excuse or the same explanation over and over and over again, I'm human. Naturally, when I hear somebody give that excuse, I'm going to think, oh, great, here's another one with the same story. But it might be true in his case. You know, it's just that I've been jaded by hearing hundreds of defendants use the same BS excuse. So that's one of the benefits of having a jury system, is that they're fresh and they haven't heard it. And yeah, it might be easier to fool them, but it's the prosecution's job to make sure that they have enough evidence to overcome that defense. So, you know, cases like the Casey Anthony case, I was surprised. I wasn't shocked because, as I said, as a judge, as a lawyer, as a police officer, you see jurors walk people where there is sufficient evidence to convict all the time. It happens. But that's the way it goes. The system does not guarantee you a result. The judicial system does not guarantee you a conviction when the majority of America thinks the person should be convicted. It guarantees you a process. That's all. That a prosecutor and a defense attorney will be able to get together and pick a jury from this panel taken from the community and present their case to that panel, and that panel decides the case. That is all. That jury decides the case. That is all the system promises you. And, you know, that was done in the Casey Anthony trial. They didn't reach the verdict that I would have reached and or a lot of America would have reached. But the system still worked. I mean, they were given the opportunity to hear all the evidence and to interpret it the way they wanted to.
How do you handle it personally and professionally if with the Casey Anthony or George Zimmerman or any of those cases that after someone's found not guilty and especially George Zimmerman, there were as soon as he was found not guilty, there were so many death threats that came out for the jury and for the judge and just for Zimmerman, of course, but for everybody. How do you handle something like that?
Well, I mean, there's nothing to handle. I mean, you know, obviously people get angry at a result of a case and they fly off the handle. I mean, I think during the Casey Anthony trial, some lady ran some innocent woman off the road because she thought it was Casey Anthony. You know, I mean, that's not the way our judicial system works. We know it's not perfect. Sometimes people get acquitted that should be convicted. Sometimes people get convicted that should be acquitted. In those cases, we have a safety net because the judge can set aside the conviction in limited circumstances, but they can set aside the conviction. Appellate courts can review it and set aside the conviction, but it's not guaranteed. So the juror's job is very serious, and they need to take their job seriously when they're deliberating and reaching a verdict. But they're not always going to reach the right verdict. Now, you know, as far as people threatening and saying, I'm going to take the law into my own hands, I'm going to kill Casey Anthony or George Zimmerman or O.J. Simpson or whoever it is, you know, clearly that is not tolerated. And anybody who, you know, takes the law into their own hands should be prosecuted fully. And that is, you know, that's why we have a judicial system, so that we won't have posses and people with pitchforks and torches going over to the jailhouse and dragging people out and killing them.
Right.
And it's not going to be perfect. You know, it's just the way it is. And by the way, it happens in the other direction all the time. You know, for people who think that, well, this was, you know, just racism, a white male killed a young black male and got away with it. We have hundreds of cases where black males kill young white males and get away with it. It's just not a perfect system. That's just the bottom line. And it never will be, by the way. As long as it's a human system, it can never be perfect. We can only do our best.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Completely agree. Well, I want to go back to your show for a minute. And after 10 years on the bench, as you mentioned a minute ago, you had the opportunity for a vacancy on Miami's prestigious Third District Court of Appeals. And that's when I believe your TV opportunity came around. Can you tell us a little about that and how did that opportunity come about?
Yeah, I was, as you said, I've been on the bench for 10 years. I loved what I did as a judge, but as we were discussing, after 9 to 10 years on the criminal court bench, it starts to get to you. You know, it's just you're dealing with so much suffering. So I was ready for a change, and there was a few vacancies on the appeals court, which never happens. So I put in for it, and along with 60 other applicants who are very, very qualified, you know, some would say more qualified than me. But they were partners in law firms, they were other judges I worked with, and things like that. And we went through the interview process with the commission, which is 9 people who interview all of the applicants and then give a recommendation to the governor. And out of the 60 applicants, I'm the only one that came out with 9 unanimous votes. So it looked really good in going forward with the governor's interview. There were 3 vacancies, and it looked like I was going to get one of them, although you can never fully predict. And then I got a call from a producer who said, hey, 20th Television, the syndication branch of Fox, would like to do a court show, and they're interested in you. So it was a major fork in the road, because here I was looking at a possible or likely appellate seat, which is really, really sought after. And then the other side was a television show, which I don't know if you know, but 8 out of every 10 new TV shows fail. So you're talking about giving up my career as a judge, doing a show. It might last a year, get canceled, and then I'm not a judge and I don't have a show. So it was a very big risk. But I talked to my family about it, and we said, you know what? It's, you know, I like to take chances. I like to try new things. Even now, I'm constantly looking for other show ideas that I might be good at. And so I said, okay, let's go for it. And the schedule gives me time with my family before my kids go off to college. And so I jumped in, and we hit the ground running. We were the highest-rated new daytime show in syndication. We beat out Tyra Banks and Martha Stewart, who launched that year as well. We had the highest rated launch since Dr. Phil, and he had launched 3 years before me. So we beat out every show that in daytime that had launched since then. Wow. And we've been on the air now 9 years, and, I love doing it. And, people who tweet with me on my Twitter at Judge Alex Ferrer, they seem to like it. So we constantly looking for new opportunities, but enjoying what I do.
Yeah, that's amazing, and it's quite an accomplishment as well that you were voted the most trustworthy daytime television host out of Oprah, Ellen, Regis, and Dr. Phil. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, I was very proud of that. I was really excited about that for a variety of reasons. One is obviously the company that I was in, the Oprahs and Ellens and all of them who are very well respected. I was really, really happy with that. And the other is, I was married for 20 some odd years. So when you get the label most trustworthy, I thought my wife would be thrilled with that. And I ran home and told her, look, I'm the most trustworthy. And she really didn't care. But about a month later, I don't know if the editors at People Magazine were high or what, but they put me in People Magazine Sexiest Men edition. And my wife was bouncing off the walls. She didn't care about trustworthy. she cared about the People Magazine Sexiest Men edition. So just shows you where her thoughts are.
Yeah. it looks like we have a call coming in. Do you have time to take a quick call?
Sure.
This is from 219 area code. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I live in Florida, and I just wanted to ask Judge Alex if he knows why the show in Florida isn't on until 2:30 in the morning now.
You must be in the Tampa area, is that right?
Yeah, I'm in Sebring.
Is that near Tampa?
It's Tampa Channel.
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody else asked me that. What happens is this. The company that produces the show syndicates it, which means they sell it across the country to any stations that want it. And we're airing in 96% of the U.S. It's a popular show, so it's picked up everywhere. The other 4% are tiny little markets that our salespeople just can't get themselves out of bed to go visit these little markets that add up to 4%. So we have the show everywhere. The thing is that the stations that buy it can do whatever they want with it. They can put it on at 2 p.m., at 10 a.m., at 12:30, or whatever. And what happens is every time the new season starts, they move you around. I mean, they especially like to move my show around because it's a Fox product, and that's a Fox station in Tampa. And so they get special deals on the show. And so they buy other shows, and they go, oh, well, Alex isn't costing us much because it's a Fox show, but this other show, like Bethany or whoever, we have to make that money back. So what they'll do is they'll jumble me to like 2 in the morning until they make their money back on the show that they bought. Or they use it to test the waters with other shows. They do that to me all the time. Over the summer, they'll try new shows, and all of a sudden my show's off the air for a month because they want to test out other things. So I don't have any control over that, but I hear it all the time from the fans. Why'd they move you from 2 to 4? Why'd they put you at 11? Or they have a sister station like, Fox might have a My Network or CBS might have a CW or vice versa, and they decide to put all their court shows on the sister station, and then all of a sudden, everybody who's watching you goes, where, your show's not on anymore. Well, it is. It's just they've either moved the time or moved the station, and, generally, stations respond to complaints, so if you're unhappy with it, get a bunch of friends and call the station and tell them you're unhappy that they moved it to 2:30, and they may very well move it back, because they don't want to lose viewers. So sometimes what happens, they test out a show and then they're like, oh, this show isn't really getting a following. Let's put Alex back. He had a good following. And then they move you back. it really, you know, I don't like it because, you know, you lose viewers when you move a show. They don't know where to find you or anything, but it's not within my control.
Well, I'm seeing all this about how popular you are, and I can certainly see why. And then you find somebody like Judge Joe Brown, who, did you see the YouTube thing about him being
drunk? I did see it.
And then he's on, you know, during the day, and I'm like, what the heck? You know,
I think Joe. I think Joe may have reruns on because I think his show was canceled. So they may be playing the best of, or they may be doing reruns. You know, I know Joe Brown. He's a nice guy. We get along well. Anybody can drink too much on an occasion. And nowadays with all that, you know, everybody having a cell phone, it's never a good thing. It's never a good thing. I certainly don't blame him for that. But the shows that they have for Joe out there are probably reruns because that show was canceled this year.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah,
Like I said, get your friends together and call the station and complain. I know that they do listen to complaints and they do make decisions based on that. If enough people call a station and say, you know, I don't like the fact that you've moved this show or that you transferred to another station or this time or whatever. You know, they may very well move it back.
That's a good thing to know.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I know we're running short of time, but I want to ask you just a few more questions. I'm a big fan of the show myself. So do you have a favorite moment? And are you surprised by some of the things that's happened on the show?
I have favorite moments every day. I mean, the one thing I can say about my job is, you know, I went from trying murderers and kidnappers and armed robbers and stuff like that, and I thought, how am I going to get excited about, you know, people fighting over small things? I get so much more excited about it because people are so passionate about their cases. They don't like being taken advantage of, and I get to see it every day. And the crazy, crazy things that people do, both to get on my show and when they're on my show, it's just so entertaining. I mean, we'll have shows that will make you laugh like crazy. I mean, I've had shows where I've laughed so hard I was crying on the bench. And then we'll have shows that'll get you angry and will want you to see that person, you know, put in their place, which I usually will do. We have touching cases that will warm your heart and make you tear up, and you know, it's really a very complete package of entertainment. I would say most of it, I like the humor in it because I have a good sense of humor and it gets to come out. So I have a lot of cases that I think will make you laugh, but it's a good variety.
Yeah. Can you share anything that happens kind of off camera, behind the scenes kind of thing that we never get to see?
Let me think about that. I mean,
kind of putting you on the spot.
Litigants. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know, behind the scenes, you know, I'm sure my producers could share a ton of stories about what happens behind the scenes. The litigants show up and they go through a metal detector and, you know, and their bags are searched and stuff because, you know, everywhere in the world there's security. You wouldn't believe the things that people show up with. You know, people show up with a bag, a purse, or whatever that contains weapons, brass knuckles. We've had drugs. We've had sex toys, lots of sex toys. Apparently people can't fly over to L.A. to do a case without putting their sex toys in their purse. It's crazy. You know, I mean, and we tell them in advance, there is security. We will be screening you. We will be going through your belongings. And they still show up with that. So every day there's a – and it's usually the people you least expect. You know, it'd be like some little old lady that's on my show or something. So we get a good laugh out of that because it's just so crazy. And my litigants will – you know, we'll fly them over there and we'll put them up in a hotel for the show the next day. And we lose litigants all the time because they'll get in a fight with somebody or – Oh, they'll get smashed drunk, and they can't do their case, you know, or they get arrested, and it's like you couldn't even stay out of trouble for 12 hours so that I could try a case. that you're here on. You know, we just scratch our heads at our crazy litigants all the time.
Does anything ever happen during the show where you need more time to decide on a case and they kind of have to stop rolling for just even a few minutes for you to kind of ponder your thoughts or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. No, it doesn't, because of the amount of preparation I do. And, you know, the trial takes as long as it takes, but the amount of preparation I do, I do the show different than other judges do. I do it according to the law where the case originated. Other judges do it based on a general fairness principle. They just do what they think is right. Like, you know, Judy will just say, no, I'm not giving you this because of whatever. So she'll never say Nebraska law is, because she's not applying Nebraska law. She's using a fairness principle. So as a result, when I'm taping 9 to 10 cases a day, when I get on the bench, I have to know New York law with regard to a landlord-tenant dispute. The second case might be Texas law, and I need to know what Texas says about dog bites, and also whether Harris County, Texas has a leash law. And the third case might be a construction case, and I need to know about contractor licensing in Connecticut. And, you know, and this through the fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh, eighth, ninth, and tenth case. And so what happens is I tape all day long. I'm up at 6 in the morning. I'm taping. I get back to the hotel maybe 6, 6:30 to 7 at night. And then I'm up until 12:31 in the morning reading the law on the states for the next 9 to 10 cases for the next day, so that when I get on the bench, I know Texas law on dog bites. I know that, you know, California has a strict liability. If your dog bites anybody, you're on the hook, whereas other states might have a one-bite rule where you get that free one bite because you didn't know your dog was dangerous. So I need to know those distinctions, and I'm able to bring it up on the show. I'm able to say, you know, if you were in California, this would be the result, but you're not. You're in this state, and in this state, the law is different. And I think people appreciate that. But it's that preparation, that much work, that leads to my not having to say, let me take a break and get off the bench. I need to research something or whatever. So we don't usually have that problem.
Oh, I completely understand that. Well, Judge Alex, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and I was looking forward so much to having you on, and I cannot thank you enough for taking out the time to join us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, and we'll talk soon again, I hope.
Sounds good. And please, right before I let you go, please let everyone know how they can reach out to you and find out more about your show.
Well, the website for our show is judgealex.com. You can go there. It has clips of the show. It has where to watch, things like that. And like I said, if a station has moved the show to a time you don't like, by all means, complain and tell them you want them to move it back, and you're not going to watch whatever show is in its place. And they may actually listen. You can communicate with me on Twitter. I have a Twitter page, which is at Judge Alex Ferrer. And I have a Facebook page. The Facebook page is Judge Alex TV. I'm pretty sure that's it. And if you look on Facebook for Judge Alex, I'm pretty sure you'll come up with my Facebook page. So I think it has me in a robe and behind a desk, and it says Judge. I think it's facebook.com/JudgeAlexTV, something like that.
Yeah, I just looked it up myself. That's exactly what it is, Judge Alex TV.
Okay.
Judge Alex, again, thank you so much for joining us, and I cannot wait to have you back on again in the future.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Bye. And that was Judge Alex Ferrer from the Judge Alex Show. So pleased to have him on. So excited. Looking forward to having him on for a long time, and so glad that we were able to finally connect. Please check him out on Twitter and his website, judgealex.com. And if you have not seen his show yet, you're crazy. You should definitely watch his show. I know that you'll really enjoy it. But thank you all again so much for joining us. Please follow us on Twitter at DrewBTR. And like our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAEJ, The Drew Show. You can look at our banner on top of the homepage that you're on right now, and it lists our Twitter and Facebook as well. But thank you all again. I look forward to talking to you again soon. Talk to you next week, with Juliet Gogla from the Michael J. Fox Show. We're really looking forward to having her on. So have a great day, everyone. I'll talk to you later.